I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML on 91.5 FM. Midway through graduate school, 22-year-old Nicole Johns checked herself into the Wisconsin Eating Disorder Center, where she would spend 88 days trying to break the self-destructive regimen of restricting and purging that had plagued her since age 13. Nicole is joining us today to talk about her candid memoir, Purge: Rehab Diaries. The memoir tracks her time at the EDC and the many harrowing experiences that led her there. Since she technically wasn't underweight or morbidly obese and still menstruated, the 130-pound Johns was diagnosed with EDNOS, or an eating disorder not otherwise specified, which she terms a, quote, island between anorexia and bulimia, a no man's land that borrows from both diagnoses, unquote. Years of limiting herself to 500 calories per day and compensating when her intake exceeded that by popping diet pills, chugging Diet Coke, purging, and frantically exercising when overwhelmed, all resulted in Johns developing multiple health problems, including severe heart irregularities. Purge is a revealing glimpse into the trauma wrought by eating disorders, especially important for those afflicted and those who care about them. Nicole, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
Well, thank you, Nicole. I absolutely loved your book. It was just fantastic and so honest. And I wanted to read a quote. The way you describe all the horrors of an eating disorder is what makes your book so special. Quote, an eating disorder is like driving to a gas station in the midst of a blizzard and writing a bad check to buy dozens of stale donuts because they are being sold at the day-old discount price, and you are ravenous because you have been starving yourself again. Your car gets stuck in the middle of an intersection. Your tires churn up wet snow. You are going nowhere as you cram donuts into your mouth. All you care about is getting back to the apartment before your roommate gets off work in time to stick the index finger of your right hand down your inflamed throat so that donut pieces will heave their way up your esophagus and plummet into the toilet bowl. There is a splashback effect as the donut pieces hit the water. Toilet water splashes your face, but you don't even care. Wow. I'm into real, honest portrayals to really let people know just how devastating, you know, these things are. And so I just want to commend you on being so honest in your memoir.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. How are you doing now, by the way, before we get into...
I'm doing really well. I've been in recovery since 2005. And that's 4 years, roughly. So I'm doing really well. I recently got married.
Oh, that's right. Congratulations.
Thank you. And have been working on publicizing Purge. So, yes, I'm doing great.
Oh, I'm so glad. You know, another thing, you know, your book is so good. And I always, when I have guests on, I read their books, of course, cover to cover. And I take out a lot of quotes. There was, I mean, honestly, I just was like, okay, I have about 25 now. I could spend the whole interview reading quotes. But I don't think that's what people want to hear. They want to hear from you. But I did want to do a couple more. In the prologue to Purge,
sure,
you write, quote, eating disorders are complex pathologies. They do not stem from a single source. They have no simple resolutions, and they are seldom cured. And you also wrote, quote, the happily ever after ending of many eating disorder books on the market is a myth. So I'm wondering, why do you think the books on the market out there aren't as honest about eating disorders as yours was?
I can't say for sure, but mm-hmm. I think maybe the authors were in recovery for that long before they wrote their books, or maybe, you know, with the whole editing process and publishing process, maybe they were pressured to kind of gloss over the ugly parts of an eating disorder rather than to be completely honest.
Yeah. Now, obviously, in your book, you didn't have any pressure, which is good. Or did you?
And I didn't. I have the most amazing agent, and my publisher is Seal Press out in Berkeley, California, and they were absolutely wonderful in just wanting the book to be how it was and portray my experience as accurately as possible, and they gave me no pressure at all to change things or make them more palatable or anything like that.
Oh, that's good. Well, it shouldn't be palatable. I mean, this is some serious issues. And in addition to talking about your personal experiences, which is so powerful, I like how in the, you know, you bring up in the prologue talking about that there's myths that need to be dispelled, which I just mentioned earlier, but also that someone who isn't emaciated, that they cannot have it. Unless you're emaciated, you cannot have an eating disorder. And you had mentioned that you were 137 pounds and you were consuming diet pill cocktails, starving and purging. You were hospitalized for fainting, a concussion, electrolyte imbalance, and three different kinds of heart rhythm irregularities. And you had mentioned that you refused to believe you had a problem because you were not underweight. And then I thought this was interesting. Later in the book, you talk about the first doctor you saw while at the EDC, Dr. Lorensky, and he wrote down that you were a well-nourished, well-developed young woman, despite having all of these issues. So obviously it wasn't you alone who could be in denial, if it seems like part of the medical system is as well.
Right.
Yeah, if you're
definitely not.
Yeah, so obviously you weren't, that you're not, you know, you're not super skinny, so they're like, oh, you must be fine, but then you have all of these issues. So that's definitely needs to be brought to light, because you obviously weren't doing fine, and a lot of women aren't, even if they're not emaciated. So if you can tell us a little bit about how this all started for you. I mentioned in the introduction you were 13 the first time that you engaged in this type of behavior. If you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, it started probably around the ages of 12 or 13, and my whole childhood, I'd been this really, like, stick-skinny little girl, and suddenly when I hit puberty, you know, my body started changing, and I was no longer this, you know, tiny little girl, and it was rather disconcerting to, you know, grow breasts and a butt, and to have my body change so much. And I think, you know, that played a large part in what was happening. And plus, like, the social pressures of junior high and high school, and, you know, the messages we send to young women that they have to be beautiful and smart and, you know, social butterflies. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of pressure, and that they should succeed academically. And so all that just kind of, like, came down on me, and that's really when my eating disorders started. I think it was a way to kind of have control over something, even though it was a false sense of control. And, you know, I think somewhere in my head I thought it would help me be this beautiful, smart woman.
Yeah. Now, did you have, what was your home life like with your parents? And do you have any siblings?
I have one sibling. I have a brother. He is 7 years younger than I am. My home life was good. My parents are happily married, and I was lucky enough to grow up beside my maternal grandparents. They lived right next door, and my dad's parents lived, like, just a few streets down. And
that's great.
Yeah, I had a large extended family, and they were wonderful.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah, I'm really lucky. My father-in-law comes over every single day to help out with my daughter. She's five, and it's so nice. And
oh, that's great.
It's, you know, it really makes a huge difference having that family. So you did have some family support, obviously. It's so tough for women and young girls. I mean, when I was young, I was actually, they used to tease me and call me olive oil because I was so skinny, and I used to try to gain weight, and then it seems, it's like, it's never enough. You know what I mean? Like, here's all these girls trying to be skinny, and then you get skinny, and I was just naturally that way, and then I was teased for it. So it's like, you just can't win. It seems like the messages are so mixed. Well, you're too skinny. You don't have a figure at all, or you're too heavy. You have too much of a figure, and it's just such a tough world out there, and it's just getting worse with all the plastic surgery, and that's all. Now we're trying to get girls to aspire to something that doesn't even exist in real life, but that's a whole nother issue. Now, if you can talk to us about what was going on at the time that you did decide to get treatment. You were in graduate school?
Correct. I was in the first year of my MFA program at the University of Minnesota. It was for creative writing. And I had moved to Minnesota from Pennsylvania. I grew up and went to college in Pennsylvania and moved to Minnesota to go to grad school. And which was a huge change for me, and I went directly from undergraduate to grad school. And at grad school, I was teaching undergrads and trying to write, and it was a lot of stress and just, like, a big life change more than anything. And I think it kind of, you know, I hadn't been doing well with my eating disorder before then, and I think that all that change kind of, like, pushed me over the proverbial edge. Mm-hmm. And that first year in grad school, I was very eating disordered. It was probably the sickest I'd ever been. And I didn't really have a support system because I didn't know, when I moved to Minnesota, I didn't know a single person. And so I didn't have that support system of, you know, friends and everything. And I had just kept getting sicker and sicker. And finally, in, I think it was like March, I passed out and hit my head on a table and got a concussion. And then I had to spend the night in the hospital because I had all these heart irregularities. And I kind of realized, you know, this is way beyond my control and I think I need some help. And luckily, as a grad student, I had the most amazing health insurance I've ever had. And,
oh, that's good.
Yes. And so I called them and checked to see what my benefits were, and I was lucky enough to be able to get treatment paid for. And so I was like, I should take advantage of this opportunity and, you know, go to treatment this summer and work on getting better.
Now, what year was that again? Was that 2002? Was that?
No, that was 2004.
Oh, 2004. Okay, because after the prologue, you actually have some selected journal entries, and one of them that I thought was so interesting on 10/27/02, you say, "I feel myself slowly slipping into anorexia. I'm in the interim, no pills, less purging, a gradual changeover." And I thought that was interesting because I had always been under the impression that there wasn't even an awareness, that it's just, you know, I thought it was just sort of a denial, like, oh, I'm fine. I'm not eating in a funny way. You know, I don't know that much about it. So
right.
This was really interesting to me. And I bet for listeners, it's interesting as well. So you actually knew that you were doing behaviors, but yet it was hard to stop them. And that's what you were just saying, that you finally got to that point where you're like, okay, I need treatment. So had it been a long time that you had kind of been, you've had this, had that awareness?
Yeah, I think really, like, when I was 12 and 13, I did not have that awareness.
Of course.
I did not, like, read about bulimia in some magazine article and decide to be bulimic or anything like that. I think I really became more of aware of it when I was 16. I went to boarding school at Mercersburg Academy in Pennsylvania, and I think that's really where I became aware of it. And while I realized that I had a problem, I wasn't necessarily ready to stop or didn't see it as like that big of a problem at the time. So I had this awareness from about the time I was 16 onwards, but I really didn't feel like I had kind of hit bottom until I was, gosh, I would have been like 22 or 23 in 2004.
Okay. All right, I see. Well, I just thought that was really interesting, so that's why I wanted to bring that up, because it's definitely eye-opening. I don't know how these things work, so it's really good for me. I just, again, your book was so incredible and so eye-opening in so many ways. Now, when you got into treatment, how were those first few days at the EDC?
They were really rough, in part because I'd never been to any form of treatment before other than just going to individual therapy with a therapist like once a week. And I did try for like a few sessions, this group therapy session at the University of Minnesota, which was just horrible. So I didn't really have any experience with treatment, and so it was just like being tossed into this completely alternate universe. And I feel like I kind of like sleepwalked through the first few days there. It was also surreal.
Yeah, it seems really surreal. You know, I remember reading you saying that, I think it was on the second day, you were saying that, you know, a year ago at this time, I was free, basically. I could roam around Minnesota on campus. I was correcting papers, and now I'm being congratulated for, you know, finishing my meal by my RC at the EDC. I thought that was so powerful to be like, here I was a year ago, and now someone's like, good job. You know, that just must
right.
have been such a trip. And another thing that I found really interesting was you say, quote, when the scale blinked 127 at me, I jumped and whooped with elation. I think that was like inside. Only 17
right.
more pounds until I was officially underweight, and underweight was my ultimate goal because then I could start over. My body would be reduced to its bare essentials and everything would be okay. How did you come to that way of thinking, and what did that really mean to you, that if you could lose that weight, that you could start? What did starting over mean to you?
Well, I think, you know, I plugged in my height and weight into the BMI calculators online and came up, you know, figured out what underweight meant for me, and I think just wanted to reach that goal, because somehow in my mind, even though logically I knew that, you know, weighing 110 pounds or whatever was not going to, like, change my life that drastically, it also, at the same time, like, I felt like if I could reduce myself to someone, like, really thin and really skinny, then I would get rid of all these, like, imperfections that my body had. Mm-hmm. And that basically it would be like starting over in a way with a new body.
Wow. Now that's intense, you know. And speaking of your body, I was really interested in the therapy that you ended up doing at EDC, and that, you know, you talk about initially being emotionally numb, and that when they did that, they had you trace your body, and it was mm-hmm. so distorted. What you saw was so distorted from what was actually there. And I remember you talking about the first time that you actually saw it the way it was, even though you said it only lasted a few minutes. How was right. that clarity in those few minutes?
It was striking because, I'd gone through so many years just with this warped idea of what my body looked like and what I looked like, and to see it clearly for the first time that, you know, I hadn't been seeing myself clearly before was just rather shocking and emotional. And it was really hard to realize, you know, that I had been thinking one way for so long, but in reality, it was something different.
Now, is that when things started turning around for you?
Yeah. I think that was the start of mm-hmm. things turning around. And really, I think, you know, just making the decision to go to the Eating Disorder Center was, you know, the very beginning of things turning around. But I would say yes, you know, that was one of the kind of clarifying moments in turning things around and realizing what was really going on, and seeing things for how they really were instead of seeing them through kind of the veil of the eating disorder.
Yeah, and, you know, how big a part of your healing has it been to get out of being emotionally numb and getting more in touch with your feelings?
It's been a huge, huge part. I mean, one thing that the eating disorder did for me was it was a coping mechanism for dealing with stress and emotions. And so I hadn't fully experienced, you know, the full range of emotions for a really long time. And I think, you know, taking away that coping mechanism, well, it was incredibly hard and very painful. It's has been wonderful to live life, you know, with the full range of emotions, even though sometimes the emotions are uncomfortable and I'm not used to them, and it's sometimes overwhelming, but it's way better than living life numb.
Oh, completely. You know, the other thing too is when they used to ask you how you feel, you would say fat, and that they would say, well, fat, you have a chapter said called Fat is Not a Feeling, and you'd say,
right.
Fat has become my standard response when someone in the therapeutic world would ask how I'm feeling. Fat is a code for feeling scared, angry, ashamed, hurt, and sad all in one. And I thought that was really powerful because I hadn't thought of that before, about when someone says, I feel fat, it doesn't just mean fat. You know, it actually
right,
has all these
right.
other things that go along with it. Yeah, it must have been such a relief. Now, how have your parents been? Have you been more open with them about feelings or things that come up?
The book was really hard for them to read, obviously,
cool,
and
yeah.
They, you know, they had a hard time with it, as did a lot of my family, but I have been more open emotionally, you know, with them, and it's a little hard to judge because they live in South Carolina and I still live in Minnesota, so I don't, you know, see them that often. We talk on the phone pretty often, but, you know, I only see them like once or twice a year. But, I'd say things are more more open. We're more open to discussing, you know, what's going on, that type of thing.
Oh, that's good. Now, what advice do you have for, you know, folks listening who either maybe they're a parent of someone where they're seeing some of these behaviors, or there's a young woman or a young man also
mm-hmm.
Who's listening who might say, oh, geez, this, you know, sounds so familiar. I'm going through this. What advice do you have for them?
Well, if they're the person that is, you know, dealing with eating disorder behavior and dealing, you know, with eating disorder, I would tell them to, you know, talk to anyone they trust, whether it be their friends, their parents, a therapist, and just tell them what's going on and basically just ask for help and kind of look at your resources around you. Like if you're a college student, you can usually get a few free sessions at your college counseling center and to take advantage of things like that. Or if you have good health insurance, you know, to see a therapist, and also look into community resources like Eating Disorder Anonymous meetings, things like that. And, you know, just to be open and ask for help whenever you need it, and to realize that you can overcome this, and it is really hard, but there is hope and you can do it. And I would say for the parents or anybody who is supporting someone with an eating disorder, just I know it has to be incredibly hard to watch someone you love go through something like that, but just to be there for whenever the person with an eating disorder needs help or wants to talk or wants to explore their options for treatment or look at resources, and just to be there to listen more than anything.
Now, are there certain things that you say they shouldn't do? I mean, is there a way that they might be too pushy and that might push the person away who has the eating disorder behavior?
Yeah, and I think it's so hard, too, especially if you're the parent or a friend of someone with an eating disorder. Like, I would stay away from giving ultimatums like, you know, you have to eat this, or like trying to shove food down their throat and like that type of thing, or trying to force them into doing things they're not ready to do.
Okay. Well, Nicole, this has been so great. I appreciate you coming on early, and I encourage everyone to go get Purge Rehab Diaries. It's such a fantastic book. And how can people learn more about you? I understand you have a blog, and if you can tell us about that.
Sure. I have a blog, which I'm trying to turn into a website, hopefully when I get some more time.
Oh, terrific.
And it's the web address is just www.purgerehabdiaries.blogspot.com.
Well, you're a fabulous writer. I was not surprised that you're in graduate school for writing, because it's written so beautifully. And I want to thank you again. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org.